Home.
Amazing how devices always work better when they're turned on. All right. So we continue our study of the Parashara Gita. The topic of this Parashara Bhagavad Gita, let me back up. We've already discussed how there are several Gitas in the Mahabharata and in other scriptures as well. There are several reasons the Bhagavad Gita is the most widely studied Gita. One of the reasons is that it takes many topics. In its 18 chapters, there are many topics that are taught in the Bhagavad Gita. In some of the other Gitas, notably in this Parashara Gita, there are not many topics, but in fact, he is pretty much focused on one topic. And that one topic happens to be dharma. Now, it's a pretty important topic, not the only topic we need to study, but it's very important. So we are spending this time. This is, of course, a very, our classes are an abbreviated version of whatever we're studying. So we're getting an abbreviated version of the Parashara Gita in which we, what better teacher of dharma could there be but Vyasa's father, Parashara. So from Parashara, Rishi himself, we get these teachings of dharma. In the end of the prior class, just to pick up a point, we're talking about the consequences of our deeds. So our karmas, our deeds, have consequences. That's the fundamental principle of karma. And sometimes when we commit an adharmic deed, there is a convention in the Hindu tradition to perform some prayaschitta karma. So if you perform a papa karma, then the prayaschitta karma is thought to remove the negative consequences of that bad deed. But just to review our discussion in our last class, if prayaschitta karma works by preventing karmas from yielding their fruits, wouldn't that violate the law of karma? If you perform a papa karma and then you perform some prayaschitta karma, if the prayaschitta karma were to prevent the papa karma from yielding its fruits, what do we say of the doctrine of karma? That would seem to be a violation. It would be like natural laws. Every act has an effect. If I release these glasses and then I quickly chant some mantra to prevent them from falling, right? Isn't that the conventional understanding of prayaschitta karma? You do an action, in this case a papa karma, and then you, before that papa karma can yield its negative results in your life, then very quickly you do some whatever is your prayaschitta karma. It's like, what is it, in that board game you get that get out of jail card. So you're thinking that, yeah, prayaschitta karma is my get out of jail card. It cannot work like that because that would be a violation of the whole doctrine of karma. Every karma must yield phala. You cannot prevent results from taking place. Prayaschitta karma is not a karmic eraser. I think I used that term. There is no such thing as a karmic eraser. And then Parashara explained that if you do prayaschitta karma, then the result is you get two phalas. Why two phalas? You're getting first the phala of the papa karma, which you can't avoid. Once you've done the karma, the phala will come. So you get the phala, the result of the papa, the adharmic action. And then the second phala you get is from the prayaschitta karma, which is a punya karma. So now you've got the result of a papa karma and the result of a punya karma, they don't cancel each other out. This isn't mathematics. This isn't physics. You know. So you receive both results, but the thought is that the effect of the punya karma, the effect of the prayaschitta karma, will somehow soften the effects of the papa karma. You will reap the results of your papa karma, but if you perform also some punya karma, prayaschitta karma, you get some extra blessings, so to speak, and those blessings can act in such a way as to soften the effects or consequences of the papa karma. So we saw that discussion at the end of the last class. Now he gets into the next topic. These are some details of the doctrine of karma that you may not have seen explained before. And just before we plunge back into the text, it's interesting that, I find it interesting, that the doctrine of karma is considered by most to be one of the main principles in the Hindu tradition, one of the main teachings in the Hindu tradition. Please tell me, if the doctrine of karma is so primary, then why don't we have any specific texts or scriptures that give all the details about how the doctrine of karma works? There is no scripture or text that's focused on the doctrine of karma and that explains it in great detail. Such a text or scripture does not exist. I looked. I looked. It's not there. And the reason it's not there is several reasons. One is it's not really what's being taught. What's really being taught, especially in Vedanta, is your true nature being Satchidananda Atma, your true nature being divine. That's what's being taught. The doctrine of karma is part of an underlying, we'll call it Hindu worldview, how the ancient Hindus understood how life works. And it was considered so fundamental then that didn't deserve an individual text. Where the topics get complex, then we see, especially in the Mahabharata, perhaps more than in any other texts, we see some of the details of the doctrine of karma explained from place to place. We've seen remember back when we were studying the Vana Parva, we saw some pretty elaborate descriptions of the doctrine of karma. Now we're seeing a further elaboration on some of the details of the doctrine of karma elaborated by the Rishi Parashara. And we'll pick up the thread. Ajnanatu kritam himsam. Ajnanatu kritam him. Ahimsa vyapakarshati. Ahimsa. Tataka makritam chasya. Tataka. Vihimsa vapakarshati. Vihimsa. Suppose some himsam, injury, kritam, is done. Suppose an act of injury is done, ajnanat. Now, ajnana, you know, means ignorance. Ajnanat means due to ignorance. But contextually, it means unintentionally. Yes, it means out of ignorance, but we're talking about performing actions. To perform an action out of ignorance means to perform an action unintentionally. That's what it means. So, ajnanat ahimsam kritam. To do an act of injury unintentionally. In the last class, I gave the example I've given before. You're walking along a sidewalk, you accidentally step on a bug. That bug is flat. So, you didn't, by the way, if you deliberately go, I made this point last week, if you deliberately smash a bug, that's not unintentional. That's deliberate. And it turns out that our intent or lack of intent is crucial, because a karma is defined as an intentional action. An intentional action is a karma. An intentional action creates a phala. So if there's a bug crawling along here and I smash that thing, I've committed a karma. What kind of karma? Himsaka karma, a harmful action. I killed the bug. And for that himsaka karma, that harmful action, I will reap the result. Of course, it's not a terrible deed, so the consequence will be proportional to the action. So for a small harmful action, I will receive a small harmful consequence. But according to the doctrine of karma, a deed done unintentionally, like accidentally stepping on that bug, it on a sidewalk, doesn't rise to the level of karma, and therefore doesn't produce a phala. And here, maybe it would be more accurate if I describe it like this. For these two kinds of actions, so we're talking about intentional and unintentional. According to the doctrine of karma, a karma, an intentional action, creates two kinds of results, a drishtaphala, we saw this last week, drishtaphala, an immediate seen result, and an adrishta, an adrishtaphala, literally an unseen result, a result that fructifies at some later time and place. And this is commonly when we talk about my karma, that's usually what we're referring to, kind of loosely speaking. So for an intentional action, we get two, according to the doctrine of karma, we get two kinds of results. We get an immediate seen result. So if I smash the bug, what is the immediate consequence? And by the way, consequence for me, we're not talking about, we know what happened to the bug. So for me, what is the drishtaphala of smashing the bug? There's a dead bug stuck on my hand. That is the drishtaphala. Because remember, phala belongs to the doer of the action. Right? The consequence of an action belongs to the doer of the action. So we're not talking about the bug's karma phala. The bug didn't do anything. I did something. So the drishtaphala for my smashing the bug is I get this messy bug stuck on my hand. That is a drishtaphala. What is the adrishtaphala is I committed a small harmful act. I will receive a small harmful consequence at some time in the future. When and where, we have no idea. This is a doctrine of karma. And this is true for intentional actions, but not so for intentional actions. Does an intentional action have an unintentional action, does an unintentional action have a drishta phala? So I'm walking along and I step on a bug. I might even hear it go crunch underneath my foot. Now, sorry, I'm being a little too graphic maybe. So that bug goes crunch, and I know, oh, oops, I stepped on a bug. You have that reaction. So is there a drishtaphala for stepping on a bug? And again, phala belongs to the karta. We're not talking about what happens to the bug. We're talking about what happens to the agent of action, me. So I stepped on the bug. Is there a drishtaphala for me as a result of stepping on the bug? Yeah. The drishtapala is stuck on the bottom of my shoe. So there is a drishtapala for an unintentional action. But here's the difference. According to the doctrine of karma, since that action wasn't done with intent, there is no adrishtapala. That karmic consequence that usually follows our deeds does not take place in the case of an unintentional action. And that's what Parashara Rishi is describing here in the first part of the verse. He says, ajnanat, to, but an action which is kritam, done, ahimsam kritam, a harmful action which is done, ajnanat, unintentionally, then what should you do? So do you need to perform prayaschitta karma? So you should say a prayer for the... say a prayer. Nothing wrong with saying a prayer, but we've already discussed in our last class that prayaschitta doesn't remove any consequence. Your prayer isn't going to bring the bug back to life, nor is it going to remove the dead bug from the bottom of your foot. Your prayer can still bring a blessing in your life, absolutely. But as we said, you cannot erase the results of deeds once they're done. Once the glasses are dropped, they must fall. Once a papa karma is done, it must yield its results. So this act of stepping on a bug has yielded a drishtapala, which is stuck on the bottom of my foot. But as we said, for unintentional actions, there is no delayed karmic effect, no adrishtapala. So therefore, Parashara Rishi says, what should you do as a, you know, to... He doesn't use the word prayaschitta here, but that's kind of the context. The last verse we talked about, he was talking about prayaschitta karma. So in this context, in this verse, in the context of prayaschitta, he says, if you unintentionally commit an act of harm, what should you do? Ahimsa vyapakarshati. By performing acts of ahimsa, by being careful not to cause more harm, vyapakarshati, you have, we'll call it a corrective action. Ahimsa is the corrective action for an unintentional harmful act. Which means what? If you step on a bug and you hear that crunch, the next time you'll be a little more careful. That's basically what he is saying. Ahimsa vyapakarshati. Vyapakarshati. One performs a corrective action. We'll call it that. And that corrective action is ahimsa, being more careful not to cause harm. But suppose the harmful action was done deliberately. So tata, in that manner, kamakritam. Suppose a harmful action was kama kritam cha asya. Asya, for the person who does a harmful action, kama, kama kritam means driven by desire. You have a desire, raga, dvesha, and based on that desire, you choose to do something. So kama kritam karma, a desire prompted by desire, an action prompted by desire, is intentional or unintentional? Absolutely intentional. So for an intentional action driven by desire, I want to do it. So for that harmful action, then what can you do? He says, vihimsa eva apakarshati. Vihimsa, harm, apakarshati, is going to affect that person. That person will suffer the consequences of their harmful action. So an harmful action done intentionally, deliberately, I'll turn it into a trick question. What can you do to avoid the undesirable consequence of your deliberately performed harmful action? What can you do to ward off the negative consequence? And the answer is
nothing.
Vihimsa eva, indeed, you will apakarshati, means pulls you down. You will suffer the consequence of your harmful actions when they are done intentionally. So this verse really calls our attention to how significant is our intention when committing any deed. Intention counts. So when you've all had the experience of you try to help someone and it goes badly, it's your intention that counts. You really sincerely wanted to help that person. And if it didn't turn out the way you expected, well, that's kind of how life works. But you are not, how shall we say, morally responsible, ethically responsible, karmically responsible. So you try to help someone, it goes badly, it's your intent that counts. By the way, I suppose that would work the other way. If you try to hurt someone and it turns out good, I can't imagine how that would happen, but if there were a situation you try to hurt someone and it turns out helping them, what counts is your intent. Your intention counts. That's the message of this verse. Intent counts for everything. Sanchintya manasarajan. Sanchintya manas. Viditva shaktim atmanaha. Viditva shaktim. Karoti yah shubham karma. Karoti yah shubham. Savai bhadrani pashyati. Savai pashyati. Parashara addresses King Janaka, Rajan, O King, Sanchintya, thinking over, Manasa, with your mind. Actually, go to the third line, get the context. Yaha karoti, one who does, Shubham karma, a good deed. So yaha karma, yaha karoti, when a person does some good karma, Shubham karma, and you do that good karma, now go back up to the top, sanchintya, having reflected, having considered, manasa, with your mind, and viditva, having understood, atmanaha shaktim, atmanaha shakti, your own power of comprehension, your own power of thinking, buddhi, intellect, rational thinking. Ishvara has blessed all of us with these powerful intellects which are meant to be used to discern the difference between dharma and adharma so that we can consistently choose the path of dharma and avoid the path of adharma. And that's what he's describing here very clearly. He says, before committing an action, sanchintya, first step is reflect on the consequences of those actions. Those of you who have raised teenagers, that was something you told your teens again and again and again, and that is consider the consequences of your actions. Because when we, and that message especially goes to teenagers, because teenagers can be very impulsive in their behavior. Does it mean adults are never impulsive? Adults can also be impulsive in their behavior. And the point is that impulsive behavior, by definition, is behavior in which behavior which is not preceded by reflection on the consequences. Isn't that what we mean by impulsive behavior? Impulsive behavior is behavior which is not preceded by a reflection, careful reflection on the consequences, so we act impulsively. We all know what that means. When we act impulsively, we're not being directed by our Atmanaha Shakti. Shakti here means intellectual power, Atmanaha of oneself. When we act impulsively, it's amazing. We've been given this incredible power of discernment. And then we don't use it. It's one of the greatest ironies of life. We have been blessed with this power to discern the difference between dharma and adharma. But too often, when we're caught up in the emotions of the moment, we become overwhelmed by those emotions, and this intellectual power that we're blessed with becomes inaccessible at that time. Isn't that a proper way of describing it? You have that intellectual capacity, but when you're overwhelmed by your emotions, you have no access to that intellectual capacity. You can't discern what is the right thing to do, so you act on the emotional impulse, and too often the consequences are really nasty when we act impulsively. So here, Parashara is making it so clear that yaha karoti shubham karma, that the performance of good deeds is necessarily preceded by this reflection on what are the consequences. If I do the himsa, if I do a harmful action, if I do a helpful action, what are the consequences? Viditva, and understanding what are the consequences of the action. With this understanding, yaha karoti shubham karma, with this understanding, someone will... Interesting, he makes a point here without saying it directly. What he's saying is, if you reflect carefully, you will do a good deed. The implied message is, if you don't reflect on the consequences, you will do an ashubham karma, a papa karma, a harmful deed. So it's all based on discernment of the difference between dharma and adharma. We've had this discussion long ago. Let me just summarize it very quickly. You've all heard this this doctrine, follow your heart. You've heard that, right? Follow your heart. Well, how to interpret that, follow your heart? Some people interpret it as whatever your emotions tell you to do, do it. Huh? If that's your interpretation of follow your heart, it means ignore your intellect. This is, by the way, this is not everyone's interpretation, but I'm giving you a worst case scenario. If you interpret that doctrine, follow your heart, that saying, follow your heart, if that means ignore your intellect, don't reflect on the consequences of your actions, but instead, whatever your heart desires, you should go and do that, fulfill that. You can imagine what a disaster you will make of your life. Now, I presume that's not whoever coined that phrase will give them the benefit of the doubt that that's not what they intended to mean. But suppose someone misinterprets that phrase. American English has some nice expressions. When somebody says, you know what your problem is? You're in your head too much. Anyone ever accuse you of that? You're in your head too much. What does it mean? It means you're considering the consequences of your actions. Is that a bad thing? That's not a bad thing. Of course, what they mean by you're in your head too much, what they intend to say is you're not in touch with your emotions, which might be a valid point, but that's not what they said. They didn't say you're not in touch with your emotions. They said you're in your head too much. Well, according to Parashara, the first thing you should do is be in your head, which means to rationally consider the consequences of your deeds. Step one. Doesn't mean to ignore your emotions. Absolutely doesn't mean to ignore your emotions, but it does very obviously mean that we have to consider the consequences of our actions. Then, yaha karoti, one who does shubham karma, a good action, saha bhadrani pashyati, that person will be blessed in life, be blessed both in a worldly sense and be blessed in spiritual growth we talked about intentionality before. To be deliberate in our deeds. So to be deliberate and intentional in our deeds includes considering the consequences of our actions. Being deliberate also means to be focused on our goals and what's important, what our priorities are. Some of you were here during our January 1st celebration when we talked at some length about the problems of lacking intentionality and deliberateness in life, which means we go through life mechanically. We get up in the morning, we go to work, we come home, and we go to bed. Like robots. Where is the purpose and meaning of such a life? So here he says to be deliberate, to consider the consequences of each and every action. By the way, he ends the chapter with this comment, and before we move on to the next chapter, let me just share with you an anecdote. When I was a young man, just starting off on this path, I was probably in my late 20s, I had learned this principle of being deliberate in action, of considering consequences of every action. And the way I turned it into a practice for myself, and the nature of that practice was, before I did a deed, I would ask myself, why am I about to do that? What is my motivation? What is my purpose in doing that deed? So before I did anything, I would ask myself, why am I doing this? And it was actually a very challenging practice. If you think about it, suppose you get in your car and drive to work, and you ask, why am I going to work? You know, these questions are not easily answered. They're really complicated, important questions that too often we don't ask. Which leads us to that mechanical life. Why am I going to work? Because that's what I do. What kind of answer is that? This simple practice of challenging yourself by asking yourself, why am I doing this? It's a very challenging practice. If you do it diligently and honestly, it will transform your life. But be ready. Because when you ask, why am I going to work, you may not like the answer. But you get the point. I think this a statement attributed to the Greek philosopher Aristotle. I don't know if he actually said it, but the statement that's attributed to him is this, or Socrates, I'm not sure who, an unexamined life is not worth living. An unexamined life is not worth living. So this process of self-examination, it's a nice way of putting it, can be a very difficult process, but it wakes us up out of this slumber where we are sleeping our way. This is back to our January 1st talk. We're sleepwalking. There was a Russian philosopher, this Gurdjieff, who said, "You're all asleep. You are sleepwalking your way through life. Wake up." And wake up means to examine our deeds, to act deliberately, to act intentionally, and as Parashara says, to evaluate the consequences of each action we commit. Okay. So we finish a chapter. These sections I've compiled are a number of chapters often run together, so we go immediately to the next chapter. Nyayagatam dhanam varnayar, nyayagatam dhanam varnayar, nyaye naiva vivardhitam, nyaye naiva samrakshyam yat Namastaya samraksham yatnamha dharmartamiti nishchayaha dharmartamiti nishchayaha. That's interesting. So you get a couple of verses in which Parashara is talking about money. So here, imagine Parashara as your financial advisor. How's that? So if Parashara was your financial advisor, what would he advise? We'll see. This is his advice. He says, dhanam, wealth, which is nyaya agatam, which is earned nyaya through rightful means, righteous means. So any wealth which is gained through righteous means, by whom? Varnaihi, by a member of the varnas. The four varnas were the class distinctions in ancient times. The varnas basically were members of society. So in this context, a good translation would be that which is done by a member of society. Wealth that is righteously gained by a member of society, and that wealth which is vivarditam. So he's your financial advisor. What will he say? So first of all, step one, gain wealth through righteous means, not through unrighteous means. And then in the second line, the second advice he gives to you is whatever wealth you gain, vivarditam. You should make it grow. You should invest it. That's what he says. Vivarditam, it should be invested nyayena, properly, righteously. So wealth that is gained righteously, wealth that increases righteously, and that wealth which samrakshyam ratnam asthaya, that wealth which is asthaya, which is kept, samrakshyam, which is kept safe, yatnam, with effort, you make an effort to protect that wealth, which means if you're going to invest it, you invest it wisely, carefully, you don't waste it, you don't spend it carefully. But his real point is in the last line. So you accumulate wealth righteously, You invest that wealth righteously. You protect that wealth so it's not wasted. And then what? So you accumulate hundreds of thousands or several millions of dollars, you accumulate, and then you die. Right? Think of that. You accumulate a lot of money, a lot of personal wealth, and then you die. If you die without having used that wealth properly, doesn't it lie wasted? And that's his point. He says, dharmartham iti nishchayaha. Iti nishchayaha, it is understood by those who are capable of understanding. Those who understand properly understand that the wealth that you gain righteously, line one, the wealth that is invested properly, line two, the wealth that is protected, line three, what about that wealth? Dharmartam. That wealth is for the sake, artha, it is for the sake of dharma, righteousness, it is for the sake of doing something good. And having all that wealth sit in your investment account gives you security, all right, but it's not doing much good. How much security do you need? It's a good question. And I know every single person's financial situation differs widely. Okay, so understood. But suppose someone has a significant amount of wealth, and their argument is, this gives me security. Which means what? They don't need it. They're not spending it. But it gives them a sense of security. This is a waste. I remember Pujaswami Dayananda, my guru, who was not only a good Vedanta teacher, he was pretty good at fundraising also for projects. And one of his really clever fundraising appeals was this. He says, and it went something like this. Money is like running water. He could be very poetic and very inspiring. Money is like water. When it flows, it is like a pure mountain spring. But when that water is dammed up, it becomes stinking and stagnant. He was making a pretty good point, and he made the same point, and the same point is being made here by Parashara. And that our wealth is dharmartam. It is for the sake of dharma. It is for the sake of doing good. Doing good to you. Doing good to your family. And if you have some left over, doing good for others. The value of... I'm telling you the obvious, but we don't think like this. Money only has value when you spend it. Right? It only does something good when you spend it. Yes, I understand you need to have something set aside for emergencies. We understand that. But how much do you need to have set aside? Some of you may have a lot more than necessary set aside. So, the purpose of that money is to do something good with it. For yourself, for your families, and then to the extent that you have money left over beyond, over and above that, then to do some good for others. Dharmartam. That money is to be used for the sake of dharma. Iti nishchayaha. Thus, it is properly understood. And then, our Parashara continues as our financial advisor. Nadharmarti Nrishamsena, Nadharmarti Nrishamsena, Karmana Dhanamarjayet, Karmana Shaktita Sarva Karyani, Shaktita Sarva Kuryan Ardhimanusmaret, Kuryan Ardhimunasmaret. Dharmarti, one artha here means one who has a goal. Dharma artha, one whose goal is dharma. So dharmarti, for that person who seeks to live a righteous life, that righteous person, dhanam arjayet, na dhanam arjayet, na arjayet, should not collect dhanam, wealth, nrishamsena karmana. Nrishamsa is some evil deed. Nrishamsena karmana, through illegal actions. Na arjayet, one should not accumulate wealth. Why? To accumulate wealth through adharmic means. We just got done talking about drishtapala and adrishtapala. So if your karma is to gain wealth through some illegal or illicit means, what is the drishtapala? The drishtapala means you have a lot of money. What is the adrishtapala? For your adharmic deeds, you will pay the price. Someplace, sometime, somewhere, we don't know when or how, you will suffer the consequences of those deeds. And the irony of that, of course, is people commit illegal deeds to get money so they can have money, so they can be happy and content, but then they get the adrishtapala. And part of the adrishtapala, just in very pragmatic example, adrishtapala means the result that comes later, like when you're caught, when you're arrested, when you go through trial, and when you're put in prison for your adharmic deed. Well, that's adrishtapala, is it not? It is. So when you get the adrishtapala, then why did you do the karma in the first place so that you can be happy and content? Can you be happy and content in prison? You get the point. Okay, so that's what he says in the first half. So whatever deeds you perform for the sake of accumulating money, they should never be illicit or illegal or adharmic deeds. And shaktitaha, to the extent of your capacity, sarva karyani, karya is what you're supposed to do, your responsibilities. Sarva karyani, all of your responsibilities, kuryat, should be fulfilled, shaktitaha, to the extent of your capacities. And you have to break the words apart. Kuryat na riddhim. Breaking the words apart. Kuryat na riddhim anusmaret. Na anusmaret. You should not be thinking about riddhim, gain. You should be fulfilling your responsibilities without thinking about gain, without thinking about what you get out of it. We had a discussion in our meditation session about setting aside your selfish agenda for the sake of following dharma. And here, Parashara is making the same point. And that is, many people, sarva karyani, fulfill their responsibilities, but with their selfish agendas in mind. Which is to say that they will help you if they get something out of it. Interesting. So many people are like that. They will sarva karyani, they will fulfill their responsibilities, but at the same time, in the back of their minds, they're always scheming. How can I turn this situation to my advantage? I know I have to do this, I have to fulfill my responsibilities, but how can I ensure that my selfish agenda is also met through this work? And what he says is, sarva karyani, whatever you have to do, kuryat. You do that. Nariddham anusmarit, without being concerned about what you get out of it. So, you know, just to go back to this fundraising thing that Pujya Swamiji used to do, you know, he would comment sometimes how people want to give in a very public way. They want to be acknowledged for their donations. They're trying to get something out of it. So they want to give a donation for the sake of personal prestige and respect. Unnecessary. So these are attitudes that deserve to be outgrown, and we're able to do that, so let us outgrow those attitudes and fulfill our duties without thinking, oh, what's in it for me? That kind of thinking. All right, then he continues. Next topic. Devatatiti bhrityebhyah pitrubhyothatmanastha ranavan jayate martyas ranavan tasmad aranatam vrajet. Rina, you've heard that word, means debt. And you may have heard a traditional teaching in the Hindu tradition that there are three rinas that every person incurs. There is deva rina, a debt to the gods. There is rishi rina, a debt to the rishis. And there is pitra rina, a debt to one's ancestors. We'll talk about each of those briefly, but the point of this verse is only three? So let's see this. So and we'll see the three rinas first, and then we'll see Parashara's understanding of these three rinas, and it'll take a much broader point of view. So the first of the rinas, deva rina, a debt to the gods. So remember, in ancient times, everything that happens according to the devas. So the rain falls because of the devas, the sun shines because of the devas, the winds blow because of the devas. This is the ancient worldview. We may not think like that today, but this is absolutely how they thought in ancient times. Which means if you want the rain to come and the sun to shine, you better propitiate those devas. So if the rain is falling and the sun is shining and you haven't made any offerings unto the gods, you have a debt. You have a debt to the devas. And that's his first one. He says, devata, to the gods. There is a deva rina. So, and in modern times, since we don't think like that anymore, we can put it in modern context. Ishvara has blessed us with everything. We have a body that works reasonably well, right? You have arms at work, legs at work, mostly. Maybe they're working a little less well today than they were years ago, but they're still more or less working. So, and a mind? Oh my gosh. They have a mind that works. Some of you have been caretakers with someone suffering from dementia, and you see the terrible loss of someone who doesn't have a working mind. So we are tremendously blessed. We have limbs that work. We have a mind that works reasonably well, eyes that work reasonably well, ears, etc. And these are all blessings. We've been given these blessings by Ishvara, and we owe a debt of gratitude for these blessings that we've received. So this is the idea of Deva Rina, the debt to the gods, the debt to Ishvara for the blessings we've received. Then the tradition says the second of the Rinas are Rishi Rina. Rishi are the ancient sages from whom our whole scriptural tradition has come. So there is a debt to the rishis for the wealth of spiritual wisdom that has come down to us. How to pay back these debts? So for Deva Rina, debt to the gods, especially in ancient times, if the god of the waters and sun have blessed you and you have that Rina, what do? You have to give something back. How do you give something back? They called it yajna. Have a ritual. You make offerings into that ritual fire. The fire consumes your offerings and symbolically transfers those offerings to the gods. So for the Deva Rina, you perform yajna, some kind of ritual worship, and in modern times, any prayer. So Ishvara has blessed us with limbs at work, with minds at work, with the eyeballs and ears at work. So a prayer of gratitude is perhaps the most appropriate response to that Deva Rina. And then for Rishi Rina, the debt we owe to the ancient rishis for this body of wisdom, this amazing body of wisdom we've been blessed with, including Mahabharata, Bhagavad Gita, which is part of this, and all the other teachings, how to repay that debt? Well, it's part of what we're doing right now. To study what they taught is considered repayment of that debt. How do you repay, just practically speaking, how do you repay a teacher? A teacher who's not salaried. We're not talking about a college professor. Yeah, they need a salary. But a teacher like me. So if I'm sharing with you this wisdom of the ancient rishis, how to repay that debt to me is to listen, to study, to learn. Seriously. What does a teacher want? What a teacher wants more than anything else is for you to learn. So the Rishi Rina, the debt we owe to the rishis of yore, the way to pay off that debt is to study the scriptures that we've received from them. And then the final Rina is Pitra Rina, debt to ancestors. Ancestors means without your parents and grandparents and great-grandparents, your chair might be unoccupied. Right. So how to repay that debt? And the convention, there's several different answers to that. The conventional answer to that is you create the next generation of progeny. So you were blessed by those who came before, and you be a blessing for those who will come later, your progeny. So this is the tradition of these three rinas, these three kinds of debt. But look at what Parashara does with this. He doesn't narrowly focus on these three, but he says, Devata. So he's talking about in the third line, Renavan Jayate Martyaha. Martya, a person, a mortal person. Renavan Jayate becomes a debtor. A person incurs debt. A person incurs debt unto whom? Go to the first line. Devata, to the gods. But not just to the gods. Atithi, guests. Bhritya, servants. And pitra, ancestors. Atha, atmanaha, atmanaha pitra, one's own ancestors. But look at how he's included atithi, guests, and bhritya, servants. He's now widened it up to all kinds of people. So why should we limit our sense of indebtedness, and maybe better to say our sense of gratitude? You could call it indebtedness. You could call it gratitude. Why should we limit our sense of gratitude to the gods, the rishis, and the ancestors? Why not extend that to all, including atithi, guests, including bhritya, servants? You're thinking, well, wait a minute, I don't have any servants. I clean my own house. Well, there are plenty of people who serve you all the time. Do you have water flowing in your home and electricity coming to your home? How does that water and electricity get there? There are a lot of people involved in getting water and electricity to your home. When you go to a store, there's someone standing behind the cash register giving you your purchases. We don't call them servants, but these are examples of people upon whom we depend for everything in our lives. Now, we're out of time, so I don't want to go further into this verse, but we'll return to this in our next class and discuss how this sense of gratitude shouldn't be limited according to this Rina Traya. There's a big thing in Hindu culture. We have these three Rinas, we have to pay off these debts. And Parashara is going to argue, it's not three. You owe a debt of gratitude to everyone. And it's a very beautiful, beautiful observation that he makes. We'll see that when we meet in our next class. A couple of quick announcements. Tomorrow we have program for children at 11 o'clock. Once a month we have a musical meditation, really nice, a very prayerful chanting of mantras and some stotras. We'll have that musical meditation tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. I conduct that, so please come and join us. If the weather is bad, please check your emails. And of course, that presumes that you've signed up for the program announcement emails and the Sunday program emails. If you haven't, please do so. That's the only way we have of telling you when classes are canceled. Library will be open after class. We'll conclude with our prayers.